some sick. That's bad.
This is combat, culture. One.
Hey, good afternoon, good evening, good morning, wherever you're from. This, of course, is Combat Culture Africa. I am your host of the evening, Oche Young Jollof Edache. Today, we have a special show on deck. I have a guest who I am adding to the screen right now once we get technical difficulties out of the way. And ladies and gentlemen, this is Bimi Shola Atobra. Bro, please correct me if I pronounced it wrong.
Perfect.
How you doing, man?
Doing good, man. How you doing?
Well, so far so good. Good day, ups and downs, but here I am having a good podcast, so I'm grateful. Yeah. All right. So, ladies and gentlemen, just a bit of backstory. I'm just going to call him Shola moving forward. Shola, is that cool by you?
Yes, sir. That's all right. Yeah, that's good.
Okay. So Shola followed me on Instagram, I would say maybe 2 years ago. I think I followed him and he followed me back or something when combat culture was first getting off the ground. We had a lot of soul searching to do after the pandemic. The show, my guys that we started the show with, life just took us in different directions. And in just trying to figure out where I wanted to be and what the show was going to be, I started posting, started trying to learn new things. And one day, Shola followed me on Instagram and I sent him a message saying, thank you. And now that the show is up and running, it just makes sense that we get Shola on the show because Shola is an active professional MMA fighter in the US. And we are here to just hear his story. And I'm sure he wants to hear some of my stories as well. So that's just the idea. So Shola, please speak to the people at home. Tell them something.
How you guys doing today? You know what I'm saying? My name is Bimi Shola Atobra. I'm just happy to be on this podcast and just help this podcast like grow. You know what I'm saying? So step by step, I'm just happy to be here.
Yeah. Yeah. Thank you very much, man. Thank you. So without further ado, we're just going to hop right into our topics for the day. And the first one is, who is Shola Atobra?
I feel like I'm a hard worker, somebody that works hard all the time, keeps his head down. Like, if you look at me up, I've been very active MMA-wise, only been doing this for 3 years. So I'm just a hardworking guy, just keep working every single day, fighting all the time, just make my life MMA, you know what I'm saying? A lot of people, they try to put one foot in, 1 foot out. I got 2 feet in. I'm just trying to make it to the top and just grinding every single day. So to summarize it, I'm just a hard worker, you know what I'm saying? So that's what I believe.
I think you strike me like you're a really humble guy, Shola.
Yeah. Very humble.
I've been a lot of things
that humbled me in life. So, you know, I just be cool and be humble. That's all I do. Like, I feel like a lot of people need to be like that. Just be cool and be humble and good things will come to you.
And fighting does that to you as well. Just sparring, getting your ass whooped, just experiencing new things. Fighting forces you to kind of confront yourself every single day.
Exactly. And
I think humility is just a natural byproduct of that. Like, and you learn to recognize that in other people as well. So kudos to you, man. Kudos to you.
I was humble. Like, I've been wrestling since I was 13 years old. Before I started wrestling, I thought I could fight. A lot of people think they can fight, but you need experience. You need to be in there multiple times to understand if you really have it or not. So, like, when I first started wrestling, I came to the wrestling room thinking I could fight. So I wanted to challenge the older guys on the wrestling team. And then when I finally was able to challenge him and he was able to take me down, just hold me down and everything, I was like, hold on, I really can't fight. My mom been right the whole time. I really can't fight. I was like, what? It was just like crazy, you know what I mean? That's where the first time I was humbled. I was, you know what I'm saying? He humbles me. I just kept growing from there.
Okay. So you just said you've been wrestling since you were 13.
Yeah.
What led you down this path to begin with?
All right. So when I first got into sports, I wanted to go to the NBA. I wanted to be like Michael Jordan, Kobe Bryant, Carmelo Anthony, Allen Iverson, you know what I'm saying? Stuff like that. that was my dream to be. I mean, me and my dad used to watch basketball all the time, soccer and basketball. They have me playing soccer and then basketball also. But the, due to the fact I'm only 5'8", only grew to 5'8". So back then, I was probably like 4'11". Just talk about I'll make it to the league. I had to like,
Moochow.
It was like eighth grade. Exactly. I was like, it's not happening. It was like eighth grade. I see everybody start growing. I said, what about me? So I was like, I can't play basketball no more. So then I tried football. I'm still too small. So I was like, I got to find something out that's aggressive, something that's like can match me, like for my style, like how I'm built. You know, it's like a lot of people, they just, everybody wants to play basketball and football instead of trying other things. So I was like, I'm going to step out the original black male, you know, saying sport, and I'm going to try wrestling. So I went in there and tried wrestling like, instantly. I was able to like understand it, and it was easy for me. It was not like basketball. I had so many challenges, and football had so many challenges I had to get through. And even if I score a bucket, I worked for that bucket. You know what I'm saying? So it was like wrestling. I instantly, once I started doing it, takedowns after takedowns, I was getting better and better. And I could see myself getting better because it's an individual sport. So I'm watching myself leaping to different like levels, and I'm just surprised with myself, and it's making me so happy about myself. So that helped me confidence-wise, everything, like, it just pushed me. So wrestling was a very, I always tell people, I'm sorry, I keep going on, but I always tell people that put your child in wrestling, jiu-jitsu, kickboxing, so they can understand confidence in themselves. Once they get confidence in themselves, the team sports is easy, because I could pass the ball to my boy Billy all day. You know what I'm saying? If I have a bad day, I can look at Jeff. Oh, Jeff, take it. You know what I'm saying? I can do stuff like that. But when you have a bad day in wrestling or any individual sport, track, whatever, everybody sees it. Everybody's on your head. Everybody's on your head. So wrestling, stuff like individual sports push you a lot. So, yeah.
Yeah, definitely. I'll lay it out of like, so over here, right? It's one of the things that one of the issues we have is schools don't really foster creativity. Yeah. Or individual expression. Most of the best schools are religious schools, and religious schools unfortunately repress a lot of people. So you end up having a lot of people that have a lot of dreams, and they don't necessarily, because you know that those formative years between 12 and 18 are really important. Yeah, really important. So, and those are the years that you spend typically in a boarding school over here, mm-hmm. and you're not developing yourself athletically, and there's this whole stringent moral lifestyle that you just, we can talk about secondary schools here, well, maybe as the show goes on. Yeah. But the point I'm trying to make is, one of the things that I had to go through was I played basketball as well in secondary school, and it was the only way I could really express my creativity and my competitive side. I was a really quiet, shy guy, but I knew that I had a dog in me, but there was just no outlets. There was just nothing, and you just keep growing, and I ended up growing up really repressed all the way. So basketball was my outlet. I played that into university. I went to the UK for university, played basketball with my university team there. And I always used to walk past this gym in Bolton. Bolton is in Manchester, Greater Manchester in the UK. It's like in the northern part of the UK.
Okay.
And I would always walk past this gym. But back then I was so skinny. I didn't have confidence, and I was always broke because I was an immigrant kid in a foreign country. So no money, no confidence, no nothing. Wasn't getting no girls, nothing. I was just this quiet guy putting my head down to the ground trying to go to school. And this MMA gym would always be on my way to class, and I would see it, and it would just always pinch me. Like, I want to do this. Like, I want to do this. And I remember telling my friend back then, who was trying to play professional soccer in the US. So he was in the university in the US, and he was trying to use that as a track to get into professional soccer. And he was saying how, oh, I'm so skinny. These guys that I'm going to go train with would like break me in half. Like, I need to be able to take a hit.
Yeah.
And he demoralized me so much.
That happens a lot.
It happens a lot, right? So this was when I was 18, like maybe 18, between 18 to 21. Then around when I was 22, 23, I came back to Nigeria. Most people, when they finish school over there, they kind of want to stay over there because the money is better, lifestyle is easier. But my family is too important to me. And I'm a dreamer. I've always been like a really delusional dreamer kind of person. Mm-hmm. So I always felt like my skills would be more valuable if I came back here. So I just came back after university. And my friend, who ended up becoming my coach, started up a gym. And he had done 6 professional MMA fights in the UK. And one day I just walked up to him and I was just like, yo, I've been working out, I'm getting stronger, I've been doing all this stuff, but I know that there's something more. Like, I can't sleep at night. Like, my conscience, I just feel like I'm not doing my best. And I think it's fighting. Will you train me? And he became my trainer. He became my coach. He coached me to 2 amateur MMA fights, became a good friend. I commentated under his promotion when I first started my commentary career. We started this podcast together. He's best friends to my older brother. And fighting just blessed my life. Just taking that plunge and just overcoming that fear and doing it. And I just found so, and that now it can lead to me and you having this conversation where we're across the world. We've never met before, but I'm just like, no, he's a fighter. Like, I know these guys. These are my people, and it doesn't matter. I'm sure we can speak the same language. Mm-hmm. All right. So, Mr. Shola, we're going to transition right into early life and growing up. So you spoke a bit about your parents earlier, and I'm curious to know, because you told me your parents from the Ivory Coast and Nigeria, or is it Ghana and Nigeria now? Or is
My mother was born in Nigeria, and my dad was born in Ivory Coast. His parents was born in Ghana. Before he was born, they went to Ivory Coast because my grandfather's sister lived in Ivory Coast. So once my dad was born, they left them there. So he didn't see his parents until like he was again after he was born until he was like 16. So he was left there for a long time. I never met my grandparents on my dad's side or my mother's side. You know what I'm saying? I probably talked to my grandma on my mom's side like one time. So I'm saying, so like growing up, you know, so I have more connection with my Nigerian side because my mom had like 13 brothers and sisters. So it's like my dad, he has one sister. She came and visit one time, but after it was like when I was like 8 years old, and when she came was not really for me. It was really for him. So, you know, we didn't really talk like that. So basically growing up, I had more of my Nigerian side. I went to a lot of Nigerian parties, uncles, aunts, stuff like that. So that's why I had my Ivory Coast flag and my Nigerian flag, but usually when I walk out, I have my Nigerian flag. I have more connection, you know what I'm saying? Due to me being born in America, in New York, so more Nigerian side. So that's why it has my Nigerian flag. But growing up, basically my parents, they wanted me to like focus on school more than like doing sports and stuff like that, because they have the mindset of becoming a lawyer, a doctor. That's the only things that really thrive in America. They are right in some aspects, but you have to become a doctor and lawyer. It takes a long time. It takes a lot of loans. And it just like, you need to find, I believe like you need to find what's for you. You don't always get to follow other people's path. And I'm just lucky to open my eyes and I was able to like jump on that. But back online, growing up, basically my parents didn't like that I wrestled. They wanted me to focus on school. So it was kind of hard. Like when I first started wrestling, my parents didn't bring me to practice or they didn't pick me up. So I had to find my way to practice all the time. I had to find my way to practice, had to find my way back home. So it was like, it was kind of hard. And I was like, I used to like.
Do you have a love? Do you have any siblings?
Yes, I'm the oldest of 6. So
you're the oldest.
I'm the oldest. So you know how I feel. They wanted me to be a doctor so everybody can fall in line, make their life easier. Cause if I start rebelling and stuff, it's kind of like now when I'm older, I see their mindset. While I was back then, I said, what's wrong with these people? You got these people tripping. I don't even want to talk to them, you know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. But now I understand what their mindset. If you the oldest become something successful, everybody else will fall in line. It's easy cakewalk now. He made it easy, you know what I'm saying? But when the oldest is doing crazy stuff, the youngest might be like, I could do that too. So it's like everybody start following behind. I see what they mean now. Like, you know, that's why they was on me so hard. It was like every day my mom used to sit down and help me with my homework. And then she'd be having over me with a belt. Like, you know what I'm saying? Like, I'm scared. I can't give you the real answer. You know what I'm saying? Like, you know, so my mom, like, when I get in trouble, she's making me hold my ears, like, just go up and down, pumping against the wall.
Yeah, yeah,
like,
yeah.
She's like, what number you on? I'm like, 3,000, you know what I'm saying? But yeah, growing up was like, it was tough with a parents that's not from here, you know what I'm saying? So, like, me wrestling and opened my eyes, like, I have to do something that I want to do in my life, what I love. So that's what, That pushed me harder, because the thing that pushed me hard, because I wanted to show them that what I'm doing, I can be great at it. You know what I'm saying? So it was hard showing them that I can be great at something other than school. Because I still was going to school, did good. I went to college and everything, but it was pretty hard. So like right there, I had to like really show them that. That's one reason why I went so hard. I always like try to come in first place at all times, because I just want to come home and like, mom, look at this medal. I told you, dad, look at this. I told you, like, school is not the only way. So yeah, being oldest of six is crazy. You know what I'm saying? Like I'm gonna bring my sisters and brother. My sister that's younger than me, she's 1 year younger than me. She just graduated with her master's. She's trying to become a doctor. My other sister, she's about to graduate from Howard University. She's about to go to Auburn University, get her master's. She's trying to be a dentist. Then my other little brother, he's trying to be a lawyer. Then my other little sister, she's in college. I mean, she's in high school. She's in 12th grade. She wants to be a hairdresser, actually. So it's kind of like me and her, it's kind of like doing a little something different. Then I have my other little sister. She's in 9th grade. She just got out of high school. So like back on track, like growing up, it was pretty hard dealing with people with foreign parents. So like I had to always keep my head down and just grind. That's what I've been humble since I was younger. I've been putting in hard work because I'm trying to prove something to people. But I learned like I don't have to prove nothing to nobody. I just never prove nothing. Like they gonna love me regardless.
Exactly. Or they'll learn to love to hate you, whichever one. Just do you.
So that's what I've been doing. Like when I went to college, I used to be like, I was happy, but I wasn't too happy because I was not doing what I want to do. Because after high school, I had a wrestling scholarship, but my mom was like, man, just focus on school. And I was like, you know what? I want to be rich. So I was like, let me try to be this lawyer thing. I'm going to just try this lawyer thing. If it don't work, it don't work. But I'm going to put my all into it. And I'm at school, like, every day I'm going to class and stuff. But I'm like, bro, I am not happy. I got to go to class again. And again, I'm like, nah, another test? Another what? And they talk about law school next. I said, oh, Lord. I said, what? I said, nah, I got to lock in on myself. You know what I'm saying? Yeah, I know they're not going to like me. Like, when I told my parents I was not becoming a lawyer, I had set them down in the room. I said, mom and dad, I'm not becoming a lawyer. I'm doing MMA. My dad's, oh, my God. I came from Africa all the way to America, and this is why. He lost every single thing in the world. I was like, man. So, like, you know what I'm saying? Growing up was like, growing up, like, it's hard with foreign parents. It's very hard. But you know what I'm saying? Sometimes in the beginning, you have to prove to them, but regardless, they love you. And just keep doing you, you know what I'm saying? They'll be happy. Like, my mom, she doesn't watch me fight. But she'll watch Usman, she'll watch Adesanya, you know what I'm saying? She'll watch Sadiq Yusuf, you know, so I used to train with Sadiq Yusuf, so she'll watch him. She'll watch a lot of Nigerian fighters or African fighters and or even other guys, you know what I'm saying? She like, she watch a little, like she watched Brian Ortega, like he just fought this weekend. And she was like, oh my gosh, he's losing so bad. They came back and won with them. And now she was like, oh my gosh, oh my gosh. She'll watch other people, but when it's time for my fights, Her blood pressure goes through the roof. She's like, no more. I'm like, mom, you didn't touch me. I took it. So, growing up in fourth, man, I can talk all day about kids. It's crazy, man. So it's like, just one thing I had to tell people with foreign parents, just like, don't worry about yourself. You know what I'm saying? Just keep grinding and focus on yourself because they're going to love you. They're going to come around. It's not only foreign parents. I know there's a lot of guys out there that do mixed martial arts and their parents be like, what in the world? You could have done any single thing, but they don't know that's what makes him happy or her and him makes him happy. And if you believe in them and put your all into them, they'll do wonders. You know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. So, yeah.
Yeah, man. You said you touched on so many things. But I'll start with this one. When you said you have you're the first of six children, right? So, and I'm guessing, and if I was counting correctly, you have it's two boys and four girls. Is that correct?
Yeah.
All right. So I am the last of six children.
Wow.
And in my family, it's four guys and two girls.
Wow.
The two girls are the first and second, and then the boys all the way down to me. So that's an interesting parallel. The second is that when I'm hearing you speak about your siblings, I feel like the average person would think about that and say, oh, that must feel like so much pressure. Like you have all these people looking up to you and all of them are doing so well and you're picking this life path that is so unorthodox and yada, yada, yada. The way I look at it is you must be such an amazing example to these young men and women.
Like after my fights and they just like, it's crazy to me. I look at myself as a normal person, ordinary person. Like people be DM me on Instagram and stuff like this and that. But I'm like, I'll even text somebody like, I'm just a regular person, bro. You could just call me Bimmy. You know what I'm saying? But my sisters and brothers, they be like, oh my gosh. Like my sister would call me on FaceTime after my fight. She want to stay on FaceTime. Like they'll group FaceTime and they want to stay on FaceTime 2 hours. They didn't want me to break down every minute in the fight. You know, each round is 5 minutes. It's like, how did you feel? What is it like? You know what I'm saying? Like, and my little brother texts me, he's like, man, you just energized me to go do my homework. I was like, nah, I didn't energize you to become the best lawyer in the world. You know what I'm like, it's crazy to me because I be thinking I'm normal, but to them, I'm just like a superhuman or a Superman. You know what I'm saying? Even like, bro, we watched you block that kick in your head went this way. You just kept coming for him. I'm like, I mean, what I'm supposed to do? You know what I'm saying? I gotta keep going. You know what I'm saying? So, like, my sister's like, man, if I got hit with that, I would just pass out. Like, no, worry, ref. Or I'll start grabbing the ref, put him in front of me. You know what I'm saying? Grab the ref. They'd be like, why are you biting him on the side? I'm like, what? So, like, to them, like, I'm like a superhuman. You know what I'm saying? So, like I'm proud of that. That makes me very happy. They look up to me and they just. I make them happy, you know what I'm saying? That makes me happy.
Yeah, man. Yeah. I have my oldest brother is like when people meet me, people come up with their own impression of who you are and all of that. But when I start to make sense to people is when they meet my family, and especially when they meet my oldest brother. Like he influenced me so much. Like growing up, all I did was copy this dude. Like all I did, his taste in music, the way he dressed, it's because of him. I started playing basketball as well. Like everything, he played competitively in Nigeria, represented the Nigerian basketball team on one occasion in Angola. So solid guy, disciplined. Like I just wanted to be this guy when I was growing up. So I get it, trust me. Like when it's the first, when you were speaking about what all of them were doing, I'm just like, yo, I hope this guy knows that the beauty of being an older sibling is your story gets told through the lives of your younger ones.
Yeah.
Your story doesn't end with you. Like if you do a good job, it'll show in every single brother and sister you have. If you do a terrible job, it'll show in all of them as well. Yeah, so. Yeah, yeah. It's a beautiful thing. It's a beautiful thing. I just wanted to give you props there, man. Mm-hmm. All right. And then the next thing now is, so with regards to your family, you said growing up, you were always more in tune with your Nigerian side, partly as a result of the fact that your mom's family is so large and and just everything, unique circumstances.
They always, and then the thing is, when she moved to America, they would come and visit, or they'll send money, or they'll just pop up, stuff like that. Or she has a brother that lives in New York. I'll go stay with him and stuff like that. So that their presence, Nigerian presence, is always around me. You know, so my dad only had one sister and she lived in France. So I never really, you know what I'm saying, got that other side. Mm. Except when I eat, like I check in, stuff like that.
I don't know. You would have to educate me on Ivory Coast cuisine.
It's kind of like rice, but it's small, and you eat it with fish, fried fish, you know what I'm saying? So, like, that's the only time I connect to the other side. But other times, fufu, stuff like that, you know what I'm saying? So, I don't eat fufu and egusi soup and stuff like that no more. I need my stomach to stay slim, you know what I'm saying? But other than that, I just more of the Nigerian side, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. All right. So have you you've never been to Nigeria before, I'm assuming?
So, all right. So, when I used to get in trouble when I was younger, they used to be like, we're going to ship you there and leave you there for a couple years so you could understand. And I used to be like, my uncles used to come and they used to have like a little meeting. So they'll sit down and I'll come in and they'd be like, some people fight for me to stay here. Some people be like, nah. But my mom, she's the biggest actor. So before they come, you're going back and stuff like that. So I'm like, oh my, I'm believing it. I'm crying. I'm like, damn, I'm gone. You know what I'm saying? I'm gone. I mean, I don't hear no good story though. No good story.
None.
I like hearing there's no electricity. So I said, wow. So I thought I was going back. Then when my uncles come, she'll change like this. No, you're not taking my son. You're not taking my son. And they're like, what you mean? We drove all the homes.
But is it all a prank?
You said what?
So are they trying to trick you or is it genuine?
They're just trying to trick me. You know what I'm saying?
Okay.
So I'm thinking I'm going back, but they always say that. But they never sent me back. So I never went. And I was supposed to go before COVID. And then COVID happened. So, you know, so I never got to go. So I just, my mom, she goes back regularly. But when she goes, I'm in school. So it's like, she never goes during the summer. She goes when she's ready. You know what I'm saying? So it's like, and then the plane tickets is crazy prices to get over there. It's crazy. Because if you go there,
it's expensive. Yeah.
When you go there, you need to stay there for 2 months.
Yeah, man. Enjoy yourself.
Enjoy yourself.
Like, really, really maximize that ticket.
Exactly.
Trust me, I know. My fiance is in the U.S., so she's Egyptian, but she lives in the U.S. So we get to see each other maybe 2-3 times a year, and then the rest of it we're just making. So we're getting married this year, actually, December, God willing.
Congratulations, man.
Thank you, my brother. Mm-hmm. Thank you. And the thing now is that I know that hustle of struggling to get ticket money, it's kind of crazy. It's kind of brutal. And especially because we over here, the biggest issue right now, so there's lots of issues. I don't like to complain like anymore. I had a long, so I'm 32 right now. I've been in Nigeria since I was 23. That was when I graduated from the university, came back here. And over time, you go through different phases. You're always, there's a phase in your life you're looking for someone to blame. There's a phase in your life you're waiting for someone to come save you. There's a phase in your life where you're depending on external factors and stuff. And then maybe you stumble and fall, but you keep falling forward enough. And then one day you learn that you can depend on yourself. Like God has put infinite resources inside of yourself that you can harness if you know how. And that's what my story with Nigeria has been. It's just been soul searching, failing, picking myself up, learning new things, learning that the failures weren't really failures and that it's all just part of this beautiful journey. It's all lessons. And so, oh God, I hope I haven't forgotten the point I was trying to make. This hardly happens to me, man, but that means I'm enjoying this conversation. But I think I was trying to point out something with regards to So the biggest challenge now, right now here, is that the value of our currency is dropping. Like astronomically. Yeah. So we have a new president, new administration. They're making all these reforms. But the truth is, my brother, man, if I'm being real with you, it's always like everything here, you kind of have to approach it from the you have to approach it from the butt, then use that to go to the head. You don't start from the head, then make it to the butt here.
Right.
So in this particular case now, you have to be thinking about who can benefit from some of these reforms that are taking place. And it's never a nice answer, because it means that the wealthy or whoever is in office, they're not really representing the needs of the people. And we know this is the story of Nigeria. It's been like this for the longest time. Right. So right now, the value of our currency is dropping, and that's causing the cost of food to go up crazy.
Yeah.
And it's affecting everything. Yeah. People are, we're the kind of suffering that I'm seeing in the land now, just as a whole, from just people do going about their day, the security guard on the street, the guy that's just doing his thing. It's crazy. It's really crazy. People are really struggling. So you had this whole season where people were trying to anytime they would make money, they would advise you buy dollars.
Yeah.
And they would tell you, dude, but the thing now is that the cost of buying dollar, yo, dude, we could go on and on, but long story short is we don't complain anymore. I feel like all of this is meant to hone a specific kind of person, and not just a specific kind of person. It's supposed to hone all of us to just learn to appreciate life when there's little, so that when there is much, you don't take it for granted. And that's one of many things that suffering in this place will teach you. But the benefit now is that you gain a lot of perspective. Like, I know for a fact that coming back to Nigeria has made me so much more empathetic. I care about other people a lot more now, because you know that everybody is in the struggle with you. And I really did forget the point I was trying to make, and I couldn't get it back, man. But I just feel like I needed to share that in the moment, because it's important. We were on the point of you never having come back, and all the bad stories you were hearing, and I just wanted to buttress that the stories you heard were true, but at the same time there's a lot of beauty in this place too, because the purity of the human connection here, people are genuinely themselves. They're not trying to like be two-faced about nothing. There's no I'm using my words to hold me to like come get me or nail me later. Like, people really relate with everybody as they are, like, at least to the best of our abilities. We're not perfect, but that's one of the most relieving things I found when I came back to Nigeria. It was like, in the UK, I found like I had to walk on eggshells, and there was so much about social norms and the culture that was just foreign to me. Which is normal. But coming back here, just being able to speak and know that people understand me and that it's not being taken anyway, and it's a relief. And I do want that for you as well, because you don't even seem like you've been away for so long. Your age, you seem like you're my age. Like, you're not, you don't seem, and that's in terms of like just wisdom and perspective. And so I feel like if you came here with all this already, that this great job your parents have done, you would just level up, man, just as a human being.
facts.
But you wanted to say something, man, before I interrupted you, sorry.
I feel like my parents got me like this, you know what I'm saying? Just how they raised me, you know what I'm saying? Have my mindset like this. So that's why I feel like a lot of people tell me that, you know, that. So, like, I feel like they're a big factor why I act like this.
Yeah, man. Yeah, shout outs to your mom and dad, man. And shout outs to your amazing brothers and sisters. All right, bro. we've done 34 minutes, and we haven't even scratched halfway through our... So let's just go right into number three. So what led you into MMA? So we did wrestling at the age of 13. Mm-hmm. Then we decided to pursue that, got a scholarship after that, right? Mm-hmm. And then a wrestling scholarship, right?
Yeah.
So carry on from there.
So basically, I used to, when I first started wrestling, I used to see like videos of John Jones. And I was like, wow, this is crazy. This guy's getting kicked in the face. These guys getting punched in the face. I would never do that. I was like, I would never, ever do that. So I was just wrestling. I'm getting better and better. And then we had some older guys that was on a team that graduated already. They started doing amateur MMA. So they'll come in like, hey, Bimmy, can you help me with like this and that? And I'm like, okay, cool. And then I used to help them with their wrestling. And then they would like put the gloves on. And then they would hit me. I'm like, bro, this is trip. Like, this is too much. You know what I'm saying? Like, fighting in the street at school, like 15 seconds is different from fighting like 3 minute rounds. Like, whoa, I'm tired. Can we get a break? You know what I'm saying? So it was like that right there. Like, it kind of pushed me away from there. So I was like, I'm not really feeling this MMA thing. Then one of my close friends, he's a Jamaican, his name's Shamel Finley. He started doing MMA. Like 18, and he was doing amateur fight. He was winning and wins. So I'm like, wow, this is cool. You know what I'm saying? But I got my wrestling scholarship. But the thing is, I didn't use it. I went to a different school. I just went to school as a normal person. I was just like, I'm tired of cutting weight, kind of tired of wrestling. I want to try a different thing. I'm glad I did that. I was able to rest my body and everything. So I was like at school, and I was like, I'm not really feeling the school thing for real. So I see my friends doing good at amateur MMA, and I was like, let me just come to the gym. So I went ahead, you know what I'm saying? Before I went to the gym, I'm still back watching my John Jones. I'm watching like Tyron Woodley, and then Usman is coming up. So I'm like watching Usman. I'm like, yo, I can feel it through it. I can feel him through me. You know what I'm saying? I feel like I can do this too. You know what I'm saying? He wrestled also. So I was like, it's just like a lot of like lights is just blinking. He wrestled. John Jones wrestled, so I was like, dang. That started like a Daniel Cormier. So I was like, yes. So I was like, he wrestled too. So I'm like, all these signs are showing me. So I was like, let me go ahead and try this MMA thing. So before my first fight, I trained only 3 weeks. And my training was just running it's a mountain near where I live called Stone Mountain. It's really high. I run the mountain, hitting little pads and stuff like that. So it was like, it was a little, I like the drive, you know what I'm saying? I like the hard work. It just remember, it resembles wrestling. So I was like, I needed that. I needed something like that back, you know what I'm saying? Because just being an ordinary person, just going to work, just going to, like doing school, I was like, I'm cool with it because I'm not getting hurt. I'm just, every day I just eat my fast food and do my regular living life, you know what I'm saying? But I was like, nah, I need some excitement, you know what I'm saying? So like, MMA reminded me of wrestling. Like I needed some excitement, so that drove me really to come back. So like all those factors from John Jones, Usman, my friends doing MMA, Cormier, just those things brought me back to like brought me to MMA. You know what I'm saying? And the excitement brought the like the idea of wrestling back. So like MMA was kind of comfortable for me, you know what I'm saying? So I just gradually got into it and just boom, here I am today, you know what I'm saying? 3 years later, only 3 years.
Only 3 years. And I can't imagine how much you've changed in that time, man. I'm sure you have stories upon stories stories.
I got stories man. For days. It's crazy. It's crazy.
Please, do you have one you want to share right now before we move
yes.
on?
Yes. I got a quick one. My first amateur fight. So my first amateur fight, I fought a guy that was 4 wins and 2 losses in MMA and 5-1 in kickboxing. I have no fights. I ain't never been no cage before. Nobody ever locked a key while I've been in cage. You know what I'm saying? So, I never did nothing like this before. So it was in Tennessee. Tennessee is a place is mostly white people. You know what I'm saying? That's where Tennessee is. So
in terms of geography, is it north, south? Like, can you? Because I know nothing about American geography. So where's
I live in Georgia, Atlanta, Georgia. Okay. So it's like north of Atlanta.
Atlanta is like really black, right?
It's
like black city.
Yeah. Like really, I went to black school. Everything, you know what I'm saying?
Okay. Yeah.
So now I'm going to a different. I don't want to like. I'm going to a different territory. Okay. I'm going to his hometown also. This is where he's from. So I drive there, we get there. I weigh in
I'm gonna be butting in. Your when you say you drive there at this point, that means your parents had nothing to do with your career then.
Nothing. I told my parents about it, but they're like, What? They can't even believe it. But I was like, I'm not even gonna tell them the day I leave. I'm not gonna tell them the day of the fight. You know what I'm saying? So I'm just do this, you know what I'm saying, for myself, just to prove something to myself. You know what I'm saying? So Me and my friends, we get in the car, we go to Knoxville, Tennessee. I was like the 13th fight. You know, usually amateur fights in America, like you be like the first couple five fights. You bring up, you start up the thing, you know what I'm saying? The professionals are later on. So my first amateur fight, I'm like the 13th fight. So I'm fighting at 11 p.m. and I'm like, whoa, this is different. I'm tired. You know, I've been backstage, I'm falling asleep. I had to get up and hit pads again. So they start playing Burna Boy. What Burna Boy song I walked out to? I don't remember which one exactly, but it was a Burna Boy song. They started playing it. I started coming out with a Nigerian flag. I hear someone in the crowd like, what the fuck is that? Oh my God.
Whoa.
Yeah, so it's like, I'm like, whoa. And it's just straight white people in there. So everybody just staring at me and like, what, who is this guy? So it's quiet though. Like it's quiet. Like, you know what I'm saying? I can even hear the guy like, what the fuck is that? Like, you know what I'm saying? That's how quiet it is. Like, I go in the cage, they put a Vaseline in, I go in. The other guy comes. It's like, ooh, going crazy. I look at the crowd, people dancing, people screaming, they're throwing their beers. Like, I'm like, yo. What did I sign myself up to? You know what I'm saying? Like, who is this guy? So I'm like, this is crazy. So he comes in the cage and they locked him in there and everything. This is the first time I heard a lock on the cage. Mm-hmm. Boy, my heart went through the roof. I'm like, yeah. Did y'all just lock the key? Like, y'all locked the door? I'm like, nah, this is getting serious. This is getting serious. So we come out and we touch gloves, right? And he swings at me. So I'm like, it just passes through my face. I'm like, what in the world? This is serious. Instantly grab him, just slam him. In that fight, I had at least 10 takedowns. I had the video. I had at least 10 takedowns. I just kept taking that. But in my opinion, I won the fight. And I only came out with like 5 to 6 people to his like 100 people. And everybody that came with me knows I won the fight. I lost split decision. On paper, that's what matters. You know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm, so it's split decision. But I went to his hometown. I fought a guy that was 4-2 at MMA and 5-1 in kickboxing my first fight. And that just it helped me. I was mad I lost at first. Like probably the first day I was mad I lost. But I was happy because I fought somebody with like 11+ fights. That showed me like I can do this. Oh, this I could be something in this. You know what I'm saying? Like a lot of people, their first fight, they fight a guy that's 0-5 or a guy that probably trains in his backyard, you know what I'm saying? And his dad holds the gloves for him, like I'm passed for him, stuff like that. Or somebody that should not be in there at all, you know what I'm saying? Their first fight. Basically, that doesn't show, that's false confidence to me. That doesn't show that you could really, that still doesn't prove nothing. That is like, check nothing off. And that fight right there, oh yeah, I was like, oh yeah, I could be something in this. If I keep grinding every single day, I keep sacrificing, and if I keep believing in myself, I could be something in this. Like, yeah, that fight right there taught me a lot.
That's a crazy story, man. Yeah. That's a crazy story. So this guy that you fought, did you guys like after the fight was over, like? Because I know that the regional scene, I've heard so many stories about how the regional scene in America can be. So is it normal in the regional scene for people to get robbed in a decision?
Yes.
Okay.
That's really, really normal. The thing is, when you go to somebody else's hometown, the goal is to dominate. When I mean dominate, you need to be piecing that guy up. Or if you want to be a wrestler, taking him down numerous times. But not only taking it down, you need to cause damage. There needs to be blood. You need to be vicious. You can't go to no hometown and play this is what's called pitter pat or pit pat, tic tac, you know, so you can't do that. You can't let him hit you, you hit him back, and y'all go back and forth. Everybody knows you lost the fight. It doesn't matter what you did. Like, you can't go back and forth. When you go to somebody else's hometown, you have to dominate or finish the guy. And it has to be, you know what I'm saying? If you dominate, like I said, dominate, you have to dominate. Like a regular person could come in and be like, oh, that guy won. That has to be has to be like that, clear view. So like it happens a lot, like in America, like in regional scene, like when you go to somebody else's hometown, you don't never know who the judges are. The judges don't know you. That guy been fighting, this is his 10th fight there. He's after the fight, before the fight, weigh-ins, he's dapping every, like shaking hands with everybody. So like they want to see come on, like, if you want to see your brother make it, you know what I'm saying? Like,
true,
you know what I'm
true,
saying?
True, true.
Yeah, like, you a judge, like, I feel him. If I was a judge, and I'm not going to say that I would do this, but if I was a judge, like, my boy up there is a close fight, shoot, he won that fight. Like, he won that. Mm-hmm. He can't tell me nothing.
It's true. Human nature, man. Human nature.
Exactly. So, like, it happens pretty much a lot. So, yeah.
Okay, so, and then one question would be, how would you say that loss changed you?
It made me, it opened my eyes that I could really do this MMA stuff. Like, if I can go in there and fight a guy with 11 fights and I have zero fights and I'm able to even last, I'm able to, like, go three rounds and y'all say split decision and his way, it's crazy. Like, you know what I'm saying? I can go far in this. That made me, like I said, the first day, oh my gosh. When I got out of the cage, I was crying like the biggest baby in the world. Like, I was like, my girlfriend, like, that night, I had cried so much. I'm like, man, I know I only trained for 3 weeks, but just training for 3 weeks and putting all sacrificing, like, wow. This fighting stuff is no joke, you know what I'm saying? Like, this ups and downs for this fight, you gotta be really ready for this. Like, That showed me you have to really want this. You can't just be like I said, you can't have 1 foot in, 1 foot out. You have to have 2 feet in. You know what I'm saying? So, like, it showed me that I can really do this. So I was like, after the first day, I calmed down. A lot of people talked to me. And it's like, bro, you just went out there and fought a guy with 11 fights. You have zero fights. You had no reason to be out there. You're supposed to go out there and die. You're supposed to go out there and it was supposed to put you in the ambulance and go straight to the hospital. You're supposed to be out. You know, if you get knocked out, their arms and stuff like this, that's what's supposed to happen to you.
True.
Like I said, I was one of the last fights, so I was supposed to get the crowd jumping. I was supposed to get knocked out, the crowd go crazy. They supposed to put me up and get me out of it. You know what I'm saying? So, like I said, man, it just helped me show. It just showed me that I could really do this. So, yeah.
Okay, all right then. So I could keep asking questions, but let's not get too sidetracked. So yeah, so current plans for your career, man. Okay, well, you know what? Before we leave that, let me tell you something, because I want to parallel everything that you say.
Hold on real quick. Let me put the light so I can get my brightness again.
Okay, man.
Real quick.
Notice.
All right, cool. You go ahead.
Yeah, man. Sorry, I even just noticed that there was an error on one of the messages on the screen. Don't worry, I'm just sorting that out now. Okay, all right, bro. So I want to parallel every story that you tell. By the way, the lighting is much better.
Yeah.
Do you have water with you there? Because
oh no, I don't have water. Any water with me right now, but I'm good.
Please, can you? Yeah, sure.
Yeah, I'm good.
Okay, all right. So over here, right, MMA is still very new. I got into MMA about 5 years ago, and when I got into MMA, there were no shows, there were no promotions. In fact, the first show I fought at was my gym, the guy that owned my gym, my coach then, he used to have a fight show like every 3 months. And so I joined him, I trained with him for 9 months, and then I was like, yo, I want to do this fight thing. And he said, okay, cool, my next show, I'll book you. Yeah. And it was almost like this underground thing. You couldn't even really tell people what you were doing.
Yeah.
I would just come to work with scars on my face because it's not recognized in any way. It's just literally just guys going out to the gym and just training. Like, we had no rest and recovery. We had it's just, you're just figuring it out day by day.
You guys know one thing only, go hard every day. That's the
every day. And like, you so all kinds of things came out from that era. But it's crazy, like, because now we're at a point where we have the biggest promotion in West Africa is the African Knockouts. I don't know if you've heard of that.
I watched it already on Netflix.
Okay. So the African Knockouts is for West Africa, they're number one. And in Nigeria especially, because that's the thing is, because it's Nigeria is West Africa's biggest country. If you can there's just a massive talent pool that just gets churned out from here every year, and it's unutilized. And a lot of these guys are fighters. Some of them pick up traditional martial arts like Taekwondo. Maybe they get into kickboxing. Boxing is the farthest most of them go, but no MMA. So now it's changed so much because we, at least there's like two or three promotions that try to put up regular shows, including AKO. AKO is trying to set up their own divisions with their own champions, and that's so everybody that fights at their shows gets points towards being a champion at the end of the year, and all of that. They have this big show that they're trying to do at the end of the year to crown all their division champions. I've worked with AKO for the past 2.5-3 years now, commentator analyst work and doing interviews with them, helping them out in whatever way I can. But they're in Lagos and I'm in Abuja. But the point I just wanted to make is just that you see how it's just crazy that despite the fact that our lives are so very different, they're still very similar.
Yeah.
You can look at stuff and say, yo, I can totally see, like, I can see a bit of myself here. I can see a bit of my, and here, what's happening now is we're building it in real time. Even this podcast. I've had to go to work this morning. I'm a software developer by trade.
Okay.
So I went to work in the morning. I have it 9 to 5. I went to work in the morning. I try to get to work around 7 a.m. So usually by 5 a.m. in the morning, I'm up, I'm training, do my prayers, clean up my house, get on the road early, drive to work. It's like a 30-minute drive to work. Then I'm at the office for like 8 hours. Just get my stuff done. It's even at the office. I produce the podcast. I do all the editing for the podcast myself, do everything, the videos, everything, the audio. I do voiceover work for some of the local promotions here as well. And then I'm back home now. But the reason I'm saying it is I could easily just tell myself, yo, you had a long day, you did this in the morning, you've done that. But for me, I love this game so much.
Yeah.
I love everything about combat sports, about mixed martial arts. And it's even made me develop a new kind of love and appreciation for my fellow Nigerians that was never there before. Like, I look at Nigeria like it's just full of possibilities now. I don't look at it like it's a place that I'm just so excited for the future. And a big part of that is MMA.
Too.
Yeah, man. Yeah,
the future
is beautiful.
Yeah, man, I feel like I was just, like, this morning I was running my miles, and I was like, when I run, I'm imagining things. Like, if I have a fight, I can imagine the finish. Like, I just, the whole 5 miles, 3 to 5 miles, I'm just imagining. I was just thinking, like, when I make it to the UFC, might have a big event in Nigeria, and I just want to be there. I want to be the main event, you know what I'm saying? I feel like that I can make that happen, so, like, that's one of my things on my list, like fight in Nigeria, be a main event, or even be on the main card. I would just be so happy, you know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. And I could play Burna Boy and everybody would know what's going on. You know? Burna Boy might be there, so, you know what I'm saying? So like, that's one of my, like, on my list, you know what I'm saying? So I, like, I believe in the next couple years, they're going to be a UFC PI in Nigeria. It's going to be a lot of big things. And it's like, it's not only fighting talent in Nigeria, so much more. Like, I just see so much, even my sisters and brothers, like, their mindset and whatever they do, they work so hard, you know what I'm saying? And just like this is the way your parents teach you, and how I'm gonna teach my kids is like, it just flows down, you know what I'm saying? A lot of people think like the Nigerian mindset is crazy. Like, if I go explain it to my friends and stuff, oh, your parents crazy, bro, I would never deal with that. But it's like, the older you get, you see why they said, no, you can't go to Jimmy house. You know what I'm saying? You see that, you understand that now. You know what I'm saying?
Wisdom, so like, wisdom.
Exactly. So like, I feel like Nigeria, like, just so much talent, the pool of talent is, people are now starting to understand it with the Afrobeats. That's just a little bit people understanding, just a little bit. Soon people will be like, whoa, these people different. And they just now seeing that small, just that small thing.
Yeah, you're 100% correct. So I look at my life sometimes. I grew up massively influenced by the U.S., always consumed U.S. media, tried to be like, speak like U.S. people. Like, I like, the U.S. just seemed like they could do no wrong. Like, I didn't know that I had been indoctrinated into these ideas. It's just what you see on TV, and you're just always comparing your reality to these false narratives that you're seeing on, and that's what you think the world is. But as you get older, you realize everybody is a human being just like you. And the thing I'm trying to drill into right now is we underestimate the power of culture. We underestimate the influence that culture has. You see how I grew up consuming all this U.S. media, U.S. food, trying to like listen to U.S. music, listening to hip hop, listening to rap. Like I just wanted to associate with anything that Americans were doing. I didn't realize how much it made me sympathetic towards Americans as a whole. Like American culture, I am so like American people. I make so many excuses for Americans in my head. Like I could see an American person just do, and I would be wondering as I was getting older, like, you're so critical of your fellow Nigerians. Why are you being so like, you're just being so lax with foreigners?
Yeah, lenient. Mm-hmm.
And with time, I realized it was just because I really had been colonized the second time, like as a result of the culture, the media, the movies, the action movies. Like you just thought it was all about the big muscly guy shooting the guns and saving the girl at the end of the day.
It's not like that.
It's not like that. But exactly. You learn, you get older, you get some perspective. And so what I'm saying is, what will now happen when Nigerian culture, because it's making its rounds now.
Yeah.
Just like you said, with the music. When people start listening to Pidgin English and it's making more sense to them, it's no longer out of context. When they see a Nigerian and their first instinct is, oh, that's a cool guy. He's the same place. He's from the same place Burna Boy is from. I want to know what he's thinking. I heard these guys are really fun. What will happen in 10 years? What happened in 5 years? What happened in 3 years with the internet accelerating that process even faster? I don't know, bro, but your guess is as good as mine.
Exactly.
Okay. All right. Do you have anything else with regards to, because we're just going, this conversation, we're about to hit 1 hour. This conversation is just going places. Mm-hmm. All right. So I'm going to hop right into the next one. Okay. No. Mm-hmm. We just did, you said a bit about your current plans for your career. No, actually, do you want to hit on that in any detail? Like what are your current plans? Do you have any fights coming up? What's happening?
I'm trying to fight as soon as possible. You know what I'm saying? My goal is I'm just taking one fight at a time. I'm not no rush. I'm not nobody else's time. I'm on my own time. So I'm just focused on getting better. You know what I'm saying? I'm not looking at every guy I'm fighting to get better for them. I'm getting better for guys that's in the UFC because my goal is to be a UFC champion. You know what I'm saying? So that's my goal. So I'm just taking my time step by step and just keep getting better and just focus on my development and my tools and sharpen them up right now. I don't have I used to have like a crazy like mindset where it's just like, oh, I'm UFC in next year or UFC in 2 years. It's none of that no more. It's just like, I'm gonna take my time, and when it happens. Just be ready when the task presents itself. You know what I'm saying? So like, I just keep one step at a time. Win my next fight, okay? Cool, chill for a little bit, get back to training, win my next fight. You know what I'm saying? That's the goal right now, so.
Okay, beautiful, man, beautiful. So what's your current schedule looking like? Like how many times, how often would you say you would say is a healthy schedule for you?
Fight, how many fights do I want this year?
Yeah, no, I wouldn't say this year. I would just say like how often, maybe once every 3 months, once every four?
Every two, three months, I'm looking to fight.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Okay, and your bantamweight division?
Yeah, am I right?
Okay. Yes, sir. 135. Okay. Mm-hmm. All right, man. Dude, I'm here for it because you know the beautiful thing, right? So there's this guy. His name is Odumodu Black. You may have heard of him. Have you heard of him?
Yeah.
Ah, bro, you have to get on Odumodu, man. Odumodu is like the grime hip hop.
He's a singer, a rapper.
He raps.
Yes, I know. I was just listening to one
with the hat.
I was just in the car earlier.
Doggy Dog.
Yeah, I think so. I don't remember what song it was, but I know we're talking about.
Yeah. Odumodu. So Odumodu is like the biggest thing since jollof rice in Nigeria right now, and he basically created his own sound. He did his own thing. He's like a cultural phenomenon right now. Now, a bit of backstory. Odumodu was my junior in secondary school by 1 year. And when I did my last fight, which was about 3.5 years ago, Odumodu walked me out for my fights. Actually, he actually performed and everything. They even did like a special mix of one of his tracks for me to walk out to. And I came out, I won the fight in the first round, TKO. And he was there for me. We took a picture and everything. So the point I'm trying to make is that Odumodu's, like, when I look back at when Odumodu first started, he used to go to a lot of universities to perform. And yeah. it's not common here. People like to perform in hotels, big venues. But if you think about it in terms of the long term, and like you said earlier in this very podcast, believing in yourself, if you believe in yourself that, yo, in 5 years, I'm going to be even greater than I am now.
Yeah.
You would be thinking about your audience in the same way too. Mm-hmm. You would be like, yo, in 5 years, these university kids will likely be doing their, do you know anything about NYSC in Nigeria?
Yeah.
Okay. Ah, bro. We have to get you on this podcast at least a few times so that we can just catch up.
Bro. I'm down.
Yeah,
let's
man.
Make this
please.
A reckless thing. I'm down.
Please. Maybe like every because there's so much about Nigerian culture
in America, like
please
stuff like that. And we can like connect that whereas like we see similarities from Nigerian here, and we can make this a regular thing. Man, I'm down.
Please,
you know what I'm saying?
Please, please. Mm-hmm. I would love it because there's so much about your like now NYSC stands for National Youth Service Corps. God, please help me so I don't forget what we're talking about initially. But NYSC is like mandatory. It's like how, you know, in Korea, you would have mandatory military service for 2 years when you're in Egypt. So that's basically what NYSC is. Once you finish university, you go to the government. You basically, they call them government babies. I did NYSC. Almost everybody does NYSC once you graduate from university. The government takes you to an NYSC camp, which could be situated in any of the 36 states in Nigeria. Then you go there for 3 weeks. And the camp, it's, you're there with military soldiers. You're doing military drills in the morning. You play sports in the evening. You have social events around you at night. It's like a really regimented society. Then from there, you then get sent to a state. You're supposed to not have a say in any of this. So any of the 36 states, you get sent to. And then when you get sent there, you do your service, which is getting your first bit of employment experience. So you would get work, but the work, they would typically pay you a really small amount, and then the government would pay you a small stipend on top of that. So that's
like the military here, but you have the choice to go to it.
Ah, you see, but this one has no
choice
besides
that's
that.
Crazy.
No, I mean, you can choose not to, but it's just like there's certain things you can't do, like political office. You can never hold political office. If they're appointing ministers and like really high ranking political appointments, NYSC certificate, you can get those as well.
Okay.
So it's a thing. So a lot of people, like, even so, you have a lot of Nigerians who their parents, so these are Nigerians in diaspora, maybe they're in the US, the UK, they might have been there all their lives, and their parents will still insist, okay, come back to Nigeria and do your NYSC. And it's because maybe their parents are thinking, oh, you might want to get a job here someday, you never know, all of that. Anyway, please, what were we talking about before NYSC?
We're talking about the rapper, the singer.
Odumodu.
Yeah.
So Odumodu, and then now, 5 years down the line, Odumodu is like the biggest act out of West Africa. He's definitely the biggest breakout star out of Nigeria, created his own sound, collaborated with Wale, collaborated with Skepta. He's doing all sorts of things. And who are the people coming out to buy the tickets now, Shola? It's those guys from the universities.
Exactly.
And so what I was thinking about just now is, yo, man, like, I'm talking to this guy before he's in the UFC, he's in the bantamweight division. He's making these bold statements about his future and becoming a champion. You're the university student for me, man. I'm just like, yo, man, like, yo, please carry us along for the journey. Tell us your story. Just give us any insider information, anything. Like, I saw in your thingy, in your Instagram, I think that's Douglas Lima's brother. Please, correct me if I'm
Diego
wrong,
Lima.
Right? Yeah, Diego Lima. So before we go any further, so training regimen and schedule, can you just talk about your gym? Can you talk about your influences?
Yeah, I train the American Top Team, Team Lima, that's in Georgia. We have a couple of really good guys. We have Diego Lima, Douglas Lima, Cody Durden. There's a long list of guys that's up and coming also. There's just a couple of guys that's like in the UFC or was in the UFC, stuff like that. Trayshawn Gore, who's in the UFC also. So we got a couple really good guys. Practice is always hard. There's always somebody there that's going to push you, you know what I'm saying? So that's really serious. But my training schedule goes like this. Basically, Mondays, I start off with wrestling practice. No, all right, so first on Mondays, Monday, Wednesdays, and Fridays are kind of like the same thing. So I start off with strength conditioning at 7 a.m. And then at 10 o'clock, I have wrestling practice. Go home. Usually after wrestling practice, I might go chill in the sauna for a little bit, 30 minutes. Then I go home and chill, and I come back at 6:30, and it's like wrestling practice in the morning, and then 6:30 is like grappling, you know what I'm saying? Now we're on the ground, like we're starting in bad positions and stuff like that. So that's how my Monday, Wednesdays, and Fridays go. Tuesdays and Thursdays and Saturdays are my sparring days. So when I come in, I usually run, I spar in the morning, and then in the evening, I'll run like 3 to 5 miles. And then we'll work on things for, like, if I have a fight coming up, we'll work on specific things for the fight. But Tuesday, Thursday is not like my crazy days. That's like chilling mostly. Tuesday, Thursday, Saturday is like chilling. I spar hard in the morning. Then the evening is basically running. And then we're going to bring things for the fight, stuff like that. It's basically Tuesday, Thursday. I love the evening because like recovery, kind of like recovery, but I'm still putting work in, you know what I'm saying? Yeah, yeah, yeah. Sundays are mostly I go on a walk with my girlfriend, just chill, stuff like that. But yeah, that's how my training schedule usually goes. Nothing too crazy, because the thing is, we don't want to kill ourselves, you know. So I know a lot of people, they be going crazy, you know, so they be doing crazy amount of training. My Monday, Wednesday, Friday is the hardest days. I have three different training sessions, but Tuesday, Thursday, two training sessions. So, like, I don't feel like my training schedule is crazy. It's just good for me, you know what I'm saying? So, yeah. Mm-hmm.
And that's what matters. It's about quality, not quantity. And
exactly. I know a couple people, like, they'll come in and train 5 times on Monday. Like, bro, how you gonna make it to Wednesday? Like, Wednesday you coming in, you can't even, you like, my butt, my back, my elbow, my knee. Like, bro, you gotta think smart. You gotta... Hey, I'm trying to have 40 fights if I can have 40 fights. You know what I'm saying?
So of like, course. Longevity, bro.
Is that? And then here's the thing. A lot of people say I may be wrong or maybe right. But if I'm not in training camp, I'm not going to spar like that. So, like, I'll change up my Tuesday and Thursday. I'll come in and hit pads, stuff like that. You know what I'm saying? Like, or work on positioning, stuff like that. Like, I won't. Or we'll come in and I have a guy and we'll flow spar. Which we're not like really hitting each other. We're just fainting and moving and understanding. The only time we start going a little live is when we're like in a wrestling position. Now we got to get our frame off. Now we're back. You know what I'm saying? Stuff like that. So if I'm not, don't have a fight, I'm not sparring because I'm not trying to get CT. I'm trying to live long.
Have kids and play with them.
Exactly.
Remember their names.
Crazy. You know what I'm saying? I want to fight and have a normal life also. So I want to walk in the room and like, oh, that's a regular guy. You know what I'm saying? The only way you find out if I fight, you go look me up or I finally tell you like, oh yeah, I fight. You know what I'm saying? But the first thing, when you first meet me, I wouldn't tell you I fight. I'll act like a regular person and everything. You know what I'm saying? So like I said, like, I won't even spar like that if I don't have a fight coming up. So I'll probably spar one time in that whole week. And that sparring session is nothing crazy. Nothing crazy at all. And that probably like on a Tuesday where we wear big 16-ounce gloves. You know what I'm saying? So, yeah.
What was something? Thank you for that, by the way. Mm-hmm. What's something that you would say you've incorporated in your training most recently that really got you a lot of good results?
Strength conditioning. I used to never do strength conditioning. I just believe on my African strength, my Nigerian strength. You know what I'm saying? I don't eat fufu like that, but I feel like it's still in me, you know what I'm saying? So like,
bro, it's in the blood.
Exactly, it's in my blood, you know what I'm saying? The goosey soup is still running through my blood.
It is, man.
So pepper soup is in my blood right now, you know what I'm saying? What was the question? I forgot, my bad.
So was something you incorporated in your training?
Strength conditioning is very important now to me. Like I make sure that's done. You know what I'm saying? I have a coach that does it. I leave it all to him. You know what I'm saying? Strength conditioning on Monday is one of the hardest ones. Boy, he'd be trying to kill me. You know what I'm saying? But it's like the fight. You know what I'm saying? You have to push in the fight. If you tie your arms tired, nobody cares. You got to keep fighting. So like he'd be pushing me. Wednesday when I do strength conditioning, it's like a mid-level, you know what I'm saying? Like still a hard push, I'm still sweating a lot and everything, you know what I'm saying? My strength conditioning is not lifting weights only, it's explosive workouts. Like I'm, you know what I'm saying? It's very explosive, stuff like that. And then we're not lifting heavy weights. If we're lifting some weights, it's like boom, boom, like stuff like that. Then we're hanging on a bar for like 2 minutes if we can until my arms falling off. I drop down and I'm standing in pussy position. You know what I'm saying? And it's not like a lot of breaks. The breaks are very minimized because in the fight, it's not a lot of breaks. So it's like my muscles is always working, always working. And then Friday, my do strength conditioning. That's when me and my strength conditioning coach were talking. You know what I'm saying? That's when I have energy to talk. All the other days, he says something like this. Bro. just other days, it's just like, on Fridays, chilling, you know what I'm saying? We're moving around, seeing things, you know what I'm saying? Stuff like that. Nothing too crazy. Strength conditioning is very important. A lot of people don't.
It is.
It's very important, man.
It is, man. It is. What do you have anything you would like to say about rest and recovery as well?
Very important.
Because like, I used to overlook rest and recovery as well. And eventually when I discovered that, it changed my life. So I don't know if you have any advice.
Yeah, that's why my training schedule is like that. Rest and recovery is very important because you gotta give your body time to heal. Like, you know what I'm saying? Like I said, like you can't just train 5 times or 10 hours in one day and expect to have good performance on Thursday. And then you also have to look at what you're eating. Like you can't eat chicken wings for breakfast and then for lunch and dinner and expect you're gonna last five rounds. Like you're gonna be tired by the first round. 3 minutes in, you're like, oh my God, hold on. You know what I'm saying? So like rest and recovery and eating the right foods is very important. You know what I'm saying? I sometimes eat the right food, sometimes I go a little off track, but you know what I'm saying? Sometimes you need the bad foods also.
You do.
You need the bad foods, you know what I'm saying? And you have to, something else I want to bring to the fact in is that you have to make this MMA stuff fun because it's if you really look at it, it's boring. And it's boring, it's scary, it's a lot of words to like come to my head for this MMA stuff, and it's like most important, it's boring. You know what I'm saying? You do the same thing every single day. Like I talk to myself during runs. Like if you talk, like you know what I'm saying, to other people, this is crazy. Like it's same boring thing every day. I'm getting punched in the face, or an accident happened. My rib might be hurting this day. It's just like a lot of things. So you have to have fun with this a little bit. Like Saturday, go out with your girl. Sunday, go on a walk, get some ice cream. You know what I'm saying? Stuff like that. You have to look like, because remember, you can't fight forever. So you don't want to look at yourself only as a fighter, because the thing is, when that time comes where you're like at the end, you know what I'm saying? When people like, oh, you might as well hang it up, you want to find something else that makes you happy. Like, you know, so I love cars, I love clothes, so beautiful. I love what else? Cars, clothes, I love video games. I play this game called Apex, and I play that.
Bruh, I play video games, but I don't play first person shooters, so I stopped with, I played Overwatch. Overwatch was the last first person shooter I played, but then I missed out on Apex. But I heard Apex is dope.
Oh, it's great. I use Apex. I keep getting off track, but I use Apex.
It's okay, man. Carry on. I'm with you.
I use Apex basically to relax my mind. Like, I don't look at it like, oh, I gotta win every game. I'm just on there, my mic, me and my friends just chopping it up, and they telling me what's going on with their life. I'm telling what's going on with my life. We're just playing to have fun. We get a couple kills, like, oh, shoot, you know what I'm saying? Stuff like that. I also use it when I'm cutting weight to kill time, you know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. Or if I have practice, like, in another 2 hours, I'll jump on. If my friend's on, we'll play a little bit. So I use video games just to kill time, you know what I'm saying? And it brings me to a different place, happiness in a little bit. So, like I was saying, this MMA stuff, you have to make it fun, man. You know what I'm saying?
You gotta
be happy with yourself, because this is gonna run you crazy if you don't. You know what I'm saying? You can't fight forever. True. You know what I'm saying? Everybody's not gonna look at you as a fighter forever. You know what I'm saying? There's some time where you gotta put up the gloves. You gotta figure out what's next things you want to do. Like, I wanna open an African lounge in Atlanta. I wanna go back to Nigeria and help out, stuff like that. Open gyms. I wanna get property out there, stuff like do Airbnbs and stuff like that. You know what I'm saying? So I have I already have planned what I want to do when I'm done fighting. You know what I'm saying? I don't look at myself only as a fighter. You know what I'm saying? So,
Bruh, I like that, man. I like that. Bruh, how old did you say you were again? 25?
Yeah, 25.
Man, after this podcast, go find your mom. just say the guy that you were on the podcast with just said you should go congratulate her because she's put your head in the right place.
We'll have her on the podcast also soon.
Please, man. Mm-hmm. Please. I would love that. That would be the best episode ever. I would love mm-hmm. that.
Okay.
All right. So before we get too carried away again, man. Anyway, I'm going to get you on again, so I won't beat myself up too much. What about injuries? You've spoken about training regimen. If you've been doing wrestling since you were 13 and you've been doing MMA for the past 3 years with training 6 days a week, like you've just described to me, strength and conditioning, running, doing all this high impact plyometric stuff. You alluded to your ribs and stuff, getting punched in the face. So are there any injuries you want to talk about? I have a friend, right? His name is Kenne. Kenne is my best friend. And Kenne has struggled with, he's the one that I said was trying to play soccer. And he struggled with injuries. And one of the things that has strengthened our relationship over the past couple of years, because I'm really big into just health and wellness and athletic style training. I learned so much from fighting that even though I've stopped fighting professionally, I've just carried them on with my training. So a lot of stuff like end range of motion stuff, just helping people overcome like imbalances. Those are stuff that just make me happy to just help my, so me and him, a lot of our friendship right now as we're older involves me helping him through some of the injuries that he's had. And I know how they've altered even the way he thinks, like, cause he had sciatica, he had a few other injuries, like stuff with his spine, like even his eye, like different things. So like, what have you had any experiences with injuries that you'd like to share?
I never really had no crazy injuries. Thank you, God. The only crazy injury I have happened to me was not even in training, it was in my fight. My shoulder came out in my fight and I kept fighting with my shoulder out. Yeah, that's the only thing that ever happened to me. But I just feel like because I'm stretching a lot, I stretch morning, I'll get up and just stretch a little bit, and I'll stretch at nighttime. And then even with my strength conditioning coach, when I come in, we'll stretch in before we even start. Like I used to come in and I should just do like this. I'm like, let's get it. And he'd be like, man, what are you doing? Like, you don't even know. Like, you know what I'm saying? So, like, you know what I'm saying? So, now I do a lot of stretching. I'm always stretching, you know what I'm saying? Like, so I feel like that helps a lot right there. But I'm also young, so I'm just thanking God nothing has happened to me. I just keep pushing, you know what I'm saying? So, yeah.
Thank God, man. Thank God. All right. So, that's a very good segue into this one, which is, so you've been in the U.S. basically almost all your life. But you have a strong connection with your heritage here, your long African heritage from your grandparents to your parents. And now the world is in this place where there's a strong need for identity. People kind of need to know, people want to know where they belong because the world is just so crazy. Mm-hmm. So if you could give any advice, I work with a lot of fighters here, MMA and otherwise, and there's a lot of guys that just need hope. They just need guidance. They just need you to give them an encouraging word. So I'm passing you the ball, man. What advice would you give MMA fighters back home?
The most important, like, this is one something I want to do, I want to come back and help myself. I feel like wrestling and jiu-jitsu over there is lacking, you know what I'm saying? I feel like Africans have the mindset to fight. Like, I know if I hit a Nigerian guy, he's going to give me a 30-piece, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
I wrestle. Do you know how to jiu-jitsu? Do you know how to correctly submit a person? Do you know how to get off your back? And I feel like right now in the MMA community in Nigeria is that wrestling is at the lack. Even African, just whole Africa, wrestling and jiu-jitsu is lacking there. And if we get that over there, hey, it'll be problems. You know what I'm saying? So we guys got to get that. If we get that over, that's the only thing I see that's a problem. When I watch Knockout, the stuff on
African Knockouts.
Yeah, African Knockout. When I watch the shows that Usman been putting together, the guys have the drive to keep going nonstop. They'll come keep punching and stuff like that and everything. But what I see is lacking in wrestling, the jiu-jitsu. It's like, if you guys come here, these guys train wrestling, jiu-jitsu. If you guys come here, they're going to just going to keep taking you guys down and submit you. You know what I'm saying? That's the only thing that's a big difference from America and over there. Like, if I take a regular guy that wrestled in high school over there, he's going to, you know what I'm saying? He's going to go crazy. If I bring a guy that wrestled D1 over there, it's gonna be easy work. He probably don't even train like that. He'll probably just come in and just keep taking the guys down.
He'll be fat. Dude, just be fat, just chilling, partying every night. Exactly. Have like three wives.
Exactly. Just come over there and go crazy. So that's the only thing I see. I love the spirit. I love the energy. I love the hard work. Like, I be seeing like little clips of the guys on the African Knockout, their little working, the training schedule and stuff. They be working, boy. You know what I'm saying? They be punching each other in the stomach, kick each other. They'll push themselves. But we just got to work on the wrestling, jiu-jitsu, you know what I'm saying? That's the only thing. After that, once we get that down pat, it's going to be scary. Real scary.
I agree, man. Mm-hmm. I agree. So about 3 years ago, when the African Knockout first started, when first popped up on the scene, like 4 or 5 years ago, thereabouts, we were trying to point out that people needed to focus on their wrestling and their jiu-jitsu more. And the gym I came up in, Body Rocks Fitness Studio, I had a few gyms that I trained in Abuja. There weren't too many to pick from. Now you have more variety. But back then, you were just a few places. And my coach back then, that was his specialty, actually, cage wrestling. And then he was the only person in Abuja that was teaching jiu-jitsu at the time. And it's crazy that even now, 5 years down the line, like wrestling and jiu-jitsu, it's still in a position where it's people are aware of it, but it's still not getting any attention. Exactly. There are a few other guys, like there's a guy, let me give some shout outs to a few people I know personally that did some good work. Coach Wale. Coach Wale used to work in Nigeria, but then he's an expatriate, so they sent him. He got sent to another country, but he was in Nigeria for a few years. I trained with him. I did. He was a purple belt in jiu-jitsu, so he would come over here, and then he would just invite every fighters, people who were really interested and dedicated, over to the house that him and the other guys were staying at, and we would just roll for like an hour, switching part. Okay, 3 minutes with this. They would have the intro, you know how it is, do the technique in the beginning, do the reps, drill it. Then we would start, just have free mat sessions. And that helped all of us improve. I know guys up till now, like Machine Gun Shags, a few other guys that are here, those are the people that really helped them elevate and clean up certain parts of their game. There's Coach Andrew. Coach Andrew came all the way from Japan. He's a Nigerian, but he's doing his PhD in Japan, came to Nigeria. We became friends, and then he started coaching at that gym too. So it's just that the thing now is, and I wanted to say this when you were speaking earlier, we're at the point now where it's going to come down to the same way this podcast is me deciding to make a few sacrifices. And here we are, and we can have this amazing conversation and beam it out to the world. It's the same way now that guys like you, because like I'm glad you pointed out the fact that we have to think about what the end game is as fighters, as people. And it's like as an athlete now, because when it's like Usman, for instance, he wasn't always thinking he was going to come, because like we weren't always seeing him in Nigeria. But I'm sure there was a point in his life where he was like, yo, I want my legacy to mean something different. I want something. And I'm just happy that you are already thinking and talking about those things, because that's what it's going to come down to. It's going to come down to people like you identifying a few people like me over here that you can work with to elevate the lifestyle of the fighters. Like that's what, because when you're coming, especially if you're when you're UFC level and you're so much more renowned and recognized, you're just a target as you're coming. It's your people, great, but human beings are going to be human beings. But if you have people on the ground building stuff up, and then you have guys over there who establish themselves, make some dollars, and then bring that into this economy here. Because like people are complaining that the dollar rates, that dollars are so expensive. But imagine if you had dollars right now, you would be happy. You would be like, yo, man, let this thing keep going up so I could change my... And that's the thing. You can... Like when I was in the UK, the salary I would make, where the most salary I ever made in my life was maybe £900 in a month when I was in the UK. And it just barely got me by for 2 months before I was back to struggling again. I came back to Nigeria with around £550 in my accounts. That was in my account for months, bro.
Right.
Months. It went a long way. So, but just food for thought, you know? Food for thought.
And I would, why you talking, right? I was just thinking, like, man, like, what if I was to come back and I had the money, right? And I just started like a wrestling for kids, like an academy. That would go crazy. And then just imagine 10 years, 15 years now Nigeria's wrestling team will be on a different level. You know, the Olympic
difference.
Team.
Difference.
Exactly. We won't just go and get beat by these other people. Like, we'll
bro,
come in
and people are hungry. They want to learn. Exactly. There's no pride. I'm not coming with no chip on my shoulder because I have. Mm-hmm. I, most people, this is all they have. It's just a dollar and a dream. I'm just coming to learn. When Usman is around, and you see how these guys are in just his presence, just gives them so much hope, energy, optimism. They're thinking because they're looking at it like, oh, he's okay. This is how he is in real life. Like yeah. I can do this. Like I can. Exactly. I want to be like this too. When Kennedy Nzechukwu came to this very house, like we had an interview in this very very same
videos,
living
room. He's one of my favorites. Also, he's so humble. He believes humble. In God. I love it, man.
Yeah,
I love
yeah.
It, man.
Amazing guy. Amazing guy. I similar vibe. Like all these guys, they bring so much life when they are around. That you can just see the positive effect it has on the industry, on the scene as a whole. So it's going to be the same with you, my brother. When it's time for you to come back, there's going to be so much the expectations, and not even just the expectations. It's more you're going to see. You see how you were saying everybody talks to you, and you think you're a regular guy, but everybody talks to you like you're Superman. Yeah. I can relate with that as well. Like I look at myself like just a guy that's trying to be better every day. But people around me are always blown away by like, oh, you did this. There's this podcast. You fought. You did this. You're like you have a job, and I get it. But it's still I'm a work in progress.
Yeah, you have goals. You're still trying to reach,
bro. I will forever be a work in progress, man. Exactly. I'm never going to arrive. That makes me happy to be honest, because I'm not someone that you want. Like I don't like being too comfortable. Like I need to have something that wakes me up in the morning, something I'm working on, something that just challenge me, something.
Exactly.
So when it's your time, bro, just keep in that, even just a wrestling camp, even if it's just for 1 month, every maybe you do it twice a year, just start small. Don't overwhelm yourself. Just identify one gym. Like if it's Abuja you're coming to, maybe you can't handle the craziness of Lagos, you're coming to Abuja, I can point you to safe facilities. You come through, you just get your people, get as many people as you want to come learn, fighters, guys who are trying to improve their technique, coaches, and you can do for kids, you can do with competing athletes, bro. It would help. It would go so far. So please just let that just keep thinking about it.
Oh yeah, that's stuck in my mind. Trust me, it is.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. When the time is right. All right, brother. So can you give a shout out to anybody that you want to give a shout out to, and tell the people where they can find you?
Shout out to my gym, America Top Team Team Lima, for bringing me in and helping me get where I'm at today. One of my sponsors, Handy Electrician. I also work as an electrician. So big shout out to them, you know what I'm saying?
You work as an electrician?
Yeah, so like I work like probably like on Tuesdays and Thursdays sometimes, like between training. Like I'll go work 4 or 5 hours real quick and he'll pay me like blessings. He'll pay me like 100 to 125 and go right back to training. So you know what I'm saying? Like he has helped me a lot right there. So like, and he also teaches me how to be an electrician so where I can open my own business. That's also what I'm doing. I've been working with him for a year now, and probably one or two more years, I open my own business, my electrician business. And the goal is to hire people when they work for me, and I make money from that while I'm also fighting, you know what I'm saying?
And
a lot of people want to come to America, but in America, they don't understand. You have to have 10 jobs, you know what I'm saying? You over here, just a burger from McDonald's is like $10, you know what I'm saying? $15 is like, you have to have multiple incomes, you know what I'm saying? So like that's my goal right there. So shout out to him for that. And that's all right now. And you guys can follow me on Instagram at SOLADA Lion, Soul of the Lion.
Beautiful, man. Beautiful. Bro, you're an electrician. You have so many layers, man. You're like like an onion, bro. All right. So we're gonna go to I'm gonna play two clips. Okay. And hopefully we don't get copyright strikes, because I know I took them off your Instagram and I know there was music, but I think this should be
who won't smoke me. I'm trying to fuck a nigga lungs up. They be like, no, don't put them down guns up. Fuck that. Say big brother, bring them guns out. When it smoke, we get the spinning while the sun out. I ain't never lacking, I pump gas with my gun out. Scream out what's happening to get the bus until it run out.
All in it, I'm
6'2", big as hell, to knock a nigga lungs out. 1, 2, 3, 4, kick your dope, get on the floor.
It's solo, like we said. Huge power. He's just a specimen, man. Look at him. He's.
I'ma kill 14 niggas if 13 bitch niggas play. I think my Draco might be gay. Why? Cause he blow niggas. I just got a brand new lolly.
What an impressive performance by Benny. No niggas. My goodness,
man. You gon' lose your best hitter. What the fuck is that? What the fuck is that? That's how I step on niggas.
Okay.
Ladies and gentlemen back home, this is Comeback Culture Africa. I think this is the best way for us to just end today's episode, is to remind everybody, of course, that things will go wrong. And yeah, things went wrong. The power went off, the internet went off, and I couldn't sign back in, and Shola eventually left. But the good thing is we got 1 hour and 24 minutes worth of solid conversation, and I think Shola is going to be a mainstay on this podcast, to be honest. I'm definitely going to be having him on in future episodes. So, ladies and gentlemen, without further ado, I think I've taken enough of your time this evening. I'm going to do the social media shout outs. Now, we are, of course, Combat Culture Africa on Instagram and Twitter. We also Combat Culture Africa on Facebook. If you want to send us an email so that you can be featured on future broadcasts, send us an email at combatcultureafrica@gmail.com. Now, it's not easy keeping these lights on. So if you want to support us more personally, and when I say personally, I mean in terms of money, then go to our Patreon. It's patreon.com/TheNigerianNerd. I am, of course, The Nigerian Nerd. And I'm also, of course, one part of your Combat Culture duo for the evening. All right, ladies and gentlemen, it's been a pleasure. Please give us a like, give us a subscribe, give us a follow, regardless of wherever you're seeing this. Shola will be on the show again soon. I love you all. Genuinely, I mean that. I love you all, and peace.